Wait for it. Wait for it. Welcome to the BerlinBrigade.com podcast with your host, David Guerra.
Greetings, hello, V-Gates, and Happy New Year! I am your host, David Guerra, formerly of Alpha Company, 6th Battalion, 502nd Infantry, Berlin Brigade, and I hope you are having a very happy 2014 thus far. If not, well, that's on you, but I hope you are having a happy one. Anyway, listen, I'm recording this episode on Sunday, January 26, 2014. Well, it was a little before Christmas since we last talked, so, I gotta ask, did you get everything you wanted for Christmas? I certainly did. I got this awesome nutcracker, but not just any nutcracker. This is one that was handmade in Germany. It's awesome. This guy is sehr wunderschön. And, but you know what? That's it. That was awesome stuff. But you know what? A lot of other stuff has happened since we last talked. So, los geht's mit diesem Podcast. All right, let's get some important business out of the way. This is the 53rd episode of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. And, you know what? Let's get this out of the way. Seriously. Have you visited the new Berlin Brigade Veterans Business Directory? Now, the Berlin Brigade Veterans Business Directory is a listing of great companies and organizations that provide some seriously high-speed, low-drag products and services. We have Berlin Brigade veteran businesses from Oregon, Tennessee, Florida, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, Virginia, and, of course, Texas in the directory so far. Now, for those that are business owners, directors, managers, or independent contractors, I invite you to get your business listed on the Berlin Brigade Veterans Business Directory. I know that there are still plenty of you out there that for some reason or another just are afraid to pull the trigger or on submitting your information. Seriously, why haven't you? It's free. It's easy. There's no trial period or anything. You're on it, and that's it. Now, I'm thinking, what could possibly be stopping you from submitting your information? Is there some reason you don't want to increase your customer base? Is there some reason you don't want to make more money? Folks, seriously, there's no excuse. It's free advertising, and it's Berlin Brigade-based, meaning, we know what we're talking about. So in this day and age, there is no reason why you should not be promoting your business. And the Berlin Brigade Veterans Business Directory is a free promotion. The only cost of entry is that you have to be a veteran of the Berlin Brigade. Other than that, that's it. That really is it. So if you run or own or manage a business with 1 or 1,000 or 1,000,000 employees and want to offer your services and products to other members of the Berlin Brigade, then here's all you need to do. It's not just all you need to do. It's where you need to be. And for those of you in need of some great services or products, this should be the first place you should be looking. So I invite you to check out the Berlin Brigade Veterans Business Directory at berlinbrigade.com/biz, B-I-Z. Okay, so do that. Also, while you're doing that, be sure you visit the registry page over the two months, January and December. There have been numerous additions to the registry, so be sure you check that out. Also, don't forget, if you got a Christmas card from me this year, be sure to visit the Christmas card giveaway page. And in there, it's also how you can get on the Christmas card mailing list. So don't worry. If you didn't get a card, there is a way you can get on it, and it's there. To access that page, just go to our homepage at berlinbrigade.com and then click on the green box that reads, "Did you get a Christmas card with a number stamped on it?" Click on that box. Now, right now, the number was issued for January, so that's posted. It's up there on that page. And the February number will be posted the first weekend of February 2014. Now, the number and what am I talking about and what do you do with that number if it matches your card? Well, click on that page. There's a couple of videos. The first one tells you what it's all about and how we're going to do this. And the second video tells you how to get onto the mailing list. So be on the lookout for that. Or, go visit that page. Look that up. Let's see, scrolling down. Well, you know what? We've got our book of the month, and it continues to be our signed books page. Currently, we have 3 authors, Don Walsh, L. Todd Woods, and yours truly, David Guerra, offering signed copies of our books. All in all, there are currently 5 books being offered, so please check that out. And I'm working with other authors to help to get them to offer signed copies of their books as well through our page there. For other books and videos available for purchase, I invite you to visit our Sound and Vision page. And I'm going to try to get everybody that's on that Sound and Vision page to offer an autographed version on our signed books page. So I'm working on that. Lastly, I personally am inviting you to visit our ebooks and downloadable content page. We have some very new offerings just for you. 3 new additions to the downloadable content. The History of the Berlin Brigade is the first one, and 2 from my very good friend John Parmenter. John and I had a fantastic conversation on Christmas Eve. It was so nice to reconnect with one of BerlinBrigade.com's longest, I guess I should say, he's not old, supporters. He's been around with us since a little bit after we first started BerlinBrigade.com proper. And so we had lost touch, but when he answered the phone, it was like we hadn't missed a beat. It was very nice to talk to him. And in the course of the conversation, I asked, and John delivered, and he penned 2 great articles about his time in Berlin and the impact it had on him and his life after his contribution to Operation Long Thrust, which occurred just after the Berlin Wall went up. So again, I invite you to visit the page at www.berlinbrigade.com/ebooks. Ebooks is plural, and ebooks is all one word, E-B-O-O-K-S. Okay, so visit that page, definitely. Let's see. As we start this new year, I also want to personally thank everyone that purchased from the Berlin Brigade e-commerce page. Your purchases are greatly appreciated, and I hope you guys, and I know some of them were for gifts, because I would see who would purchase them, and then I'd match them up against the registry, and it's like, wait a minute, that's not the same person. So what I'm getting at is, I know some of them were for gifts, so I hope you got them as gifts and enjoyed them, and again, it's greatly appreciated, and they're going to go a long way to help upgrade some of the equipment here at the BerlinBrigade.com headquarters. Looking at getting a new microphone. It sounds fine, but I need to do something around to get rid of kind of this dark, empty room sound that kind of goes with it sometimes. So some people say it's the microphone. Some people say, no, it's the wall, or it's where you are and what room. It doesn't matter. We're going to fix this up, and we're going to make it happen thanks to your purchases. So again, thank you very much. Also, a great big Dave Guerra thank you to everyone that took a chance and purchased a copy of my first work of fiction, Doughboy City. I really appreciate you buying the paperback copy or a Kindle copy. Also, I really appreciate your feedback. It helps. It really does. And currently, I am working on the 2nd in the Occupied Berlin series, and it's titled Air Bridge Berlin. And I'm looking at releasing that sometime in late spring 2014. The 3rd book will be set during Christmas time in Berlin, and I'm planning for a late fall, early winter 2014 release for that one. Kind of like, man, he's banging out books left and right. Well, folks, it's stuff that I've been writing over the years here and there. And I've finally gotten to a point now where I can just dedicate this amount of time and boom, they're done. And boom, the next one's done, and so on and so on. Trust me, I have like this treasure trove of started stories, and I'm kind of just want to make them all happen. So again, thank you to everyone that ever purchased or is going to purchase. I really do appreciate you doing that. It means a lot, and I thank you. Well, listen, I've done talking now. Now comes the time for our first interview of 2014, and a little background before we get started. We're going to be talking to William McWhorter of the Texas Historical Commission, and Bill is the lead in the Texas in the Cold War project. And I know we've talked about it. If you've been to our Facebook group page, we talked a little bit about it, and which is cool. But now here it is. So let's take a listen to William McWhorter.
Good. Well, my name is William McWhorter. I work for the Texas Historical Commission, state agency out of Austin, but we have several state historic sites all around Texas. Been the military historian for the agency since August of 2005, and about 3 years into being there, took over the duties of oral historian for the agency as our then chief historian, who also carried the oral history program under his program, retired. And for the lion's share of the time I've been at the Texas Historical Commission, I've been associated in one way or the other with our Texas in World War II initiative. And we have been working on several different projects within that initiative. Those black metal historical markers you see on the side of the highway, we did a series of those. We've done a statewide survey of all military and home front sites. We've been working on some new web pages at our website to talk about the project, but we also did oral history training workshops. We did 60 of them as of this year, starting in 2006. And the reason we chose oral history workshops is that I'm a staff of one. So there's no way I myself could get around the state and do all the military and the home front oral history interviews of World War II or any war. But if we could go out into the communities and do oral history training workshops and provide that training for free, Then we thought we could draw crowds in multiple communities across Texas in hopes of getting trained oral historians out there that want to preserve their local history. And then we would always encourage them, try and find a way to preserve your history, not just nationally by sending a copy to the Library of Congress Veteran History Project or to some national museum that interprets a particular battle or particular branch of service, but put one locally in the public library with the County Historical Commission archives, because it's great for folks who want to do a high school research project or a local junior college or even a university in bigger cities to say, hey, you know, right here we have a first-person perspective in oral history interviews in our library on the shelves. I can take a look at it. Well, working in the World War II project, you can clearly see, once you become a historian of World War II, that World War II and the Cold War are intimately connected. Superpowers in the Cold War are once, you know, allies. To what degree, that's a much longer conversation. But you can see the animosity and the frustration and the wars by proxy between the Soviet Union and the United States and their allies coming out of the end of World War II, if not sooner. Than the Potsdam Conference in Germany of 45. So I knew that World War II was naturally starting to wrap itself up with those four projects I mentioned, markers, oral history, website, and site survey. And I wanted to do something towards the Cold War. But as a staff of one, and also noting that we don't have appropriated legislative funding to do new projects such as that, we would have to, one, do a project that we had the capacity to do in staff, which is me, and two, find grant funding to do it. So what was capacity that I could do? Well, capacity is certainly doing oral history training workshops, but I also know that I can do interviews myself. As I mentioned earlier, I can't do them all, but I can do a few, and by a few I do mean a few, because it's just simply so many stories out there to preserve by one person. So we sought grant funding from the Summerlee Foundation of Dallas, who was generous to offer not only a grant for the Cold War project, but they also offered funding back when we did our World War II oral history project. And we kicked off a series of 12 oral history training workshops over the next 2 years, this summer, in southern Taylor County, near the city of Lawn, at a privately owned, decommissioned, 1960s-era Atlas F missile silo. There's a gentleman there who lives in that county who's part of the County Historical Commission, and he also is a member of the local regional heritage tourism board, who owns the site and has been working on it for the past two decades with his family to restore it. Not missile capacity, of course, but to make it some sort of interpretive center, minus the missile, of course.
Yeah.
Do you need to stop while you pick that up?
No, it's fine.
Okay. And he graciously gave us a tour of his silo back in 2010 when we were up there working on World War II projects associated with Camp Barkley and Abilene Army Airfield, which is now Dyess Air Force Base. And I knew that that silo was there, so I was thinking, how do you launch a Cold War project? Well, if you have the opportunity to do it at an Atlas F missile silo and bring the folks down in there so they can be within the context of what that facility was meant to do, deterrence, nuclear retaliation, first strike, whatever case you want to put forward in discussing all these missile bases that were across the United States during the war. Well, I thought it had to be the way to go. And luckily for us, the owner was more than gracious to the idea. He presented not only the facility to us, but he is very learned on the subject, far more than I am, as you can imagine, because this is what he's been doing for two decades. And he provided a compelling and interesting history of not only his facility, but how it fit into the network of 12 Atlas F silos around Abilene, Texas, during World War II, that had headquarters at Dyess Air Force Base, but also into the greater historic context of intercontinental ballistic missiles. So we launched it. We had a great turnout. We had at least 58 folks down in that silo for the training. I provided training in how to do oral histories, how to work with equipment, how to transcribe, you know, how to start a program if you're part of a larger group like a library committee or a county historical commission staff. And we just launched it out of that silo, and it's been, you know, just a really welcomed response from the folks that found out about it. And we're now looking for our second location, and it looks like we're going to be at the Perrin Air Force Base Historical Museum, which is near Denison in Grayson County, to talk about what it's like interpreting Cold War Delta Wing interceptor pilots and their training in Texas during the war fighters, if you will, and how today a local group is interpreting that story with an on-site museum at that post. And, of course, we will be looking to come towards South Texas in two dimensions. Remember, we're only going to do 12 of these around all 254 counties. But we're going to go towards Southeast Texas, the coastal bend, and look to do something either in Beeville, Kingsville, or Corpus. You've got Ingleside with a Naval Reserve fleet there, a squadron at least, part of the Atlantic fleet there during the war, and then Naval Reserve fleet there afterwards. You have Beeville with Chase Field. You have Kingsville with Kingsville Naval Air Station, of course, Corpus Christi Naval Air Station, and its auxiliaries all around. So that's a great targeted location right there amongst those three counties to really talk about the Cold War naval history of Texas during the war. And then we're going to look to come down here to South Texas. Maybe it's something that I can talk with you a little bit more about offline on a location we could use. I have been to Harlingen Army Airfield, which is now Valley International Airport. During the war, it's an Air Force base. In fact, my sister's, my mom, met my sister's father there during the Cold War. My wife's grandfather served there during the Cold War. Harlingen is in, at least Harlingen Air Force Base, is in so many people's lives during the Cold War for such a short time that it's open. You can look towards Laredo and think about Laredo Air Force Base and its connection to Southwest Texas during the Cold War. So we're definitely looking towards the Rio Grande Valley, look towards the west, but we're definitely going to do that coastal bend for the naval presence and just start making our way over the next 2 years across the state doing these 12 workshops. Wow. Sprinkle in there, I'll do a couple interviews myself. And when this two-year project is done, let's call it tier one, okay? I'll report back to our commissioners at the agency, let them know how it went. I'll, of course, report back to our donor and let them know how their funds made X amount of workshops, X amount of interviews a reality. And then we'll look towards, hopefully, presenting to our commissioners a second tier project. Again, working with the capacity of the program, which is just me, working in the understanding that we would have to raise grant funds to do whatever we do. But I'm looking at mirroring it similar to the World War II project. The World War II project had those four main groups I discussed, but it also had a brochure. So maybe we can do with Tier 2 new historical markers to the Cold War. We can look at a brochure. But in this day and age, a brochure in 2005 versus a brochure in 2015 is a big difference. People 10 years ago would definitely like something in their hand, but today you need to be thinking their mobile devices, their smartphones, would they prefer to look at it on their phones as they tour Cold War sites? Of course, they're not going to be able to go on to a lot of them because they're active duty Department of Defense sites or they're decommissioned former government property that isn't open to the public, but nonetheless, the history needs to be told. The history can be told visually. And maybe a site survey of the Cold War sites during the Cold War. So there are ideas out there, but the first step is definitely 12 workshops around the state and a select number of interviews.
Wow.
I hope that was not too long.
No, that was excellent. That's excellent. And 58 to respond right on the first try, on the first go. That's awesome.
I know.
Especially for up in, folks, if you're not familiar with the geography of Texas, we're looking up there at that panhandle area up there by Oklahoma, New Mexico, Colorado, that little area up there. That's where this is at. And if you know history, the Dust Bowl, remember that? Well, that's kind of, you know, flat, barren, little bit of nothing, a whole lot of nothing. That's kind of where it's at in a nutshell. Of course, you know, there's built up areas, but still, 58 people across, were they all from the immediate area or were from the panhandle area?
No. Like I told you on the phone, I was surprised when you saw word of it through either the media advisory or the online resource that drew your attention to it, that we heard from you in Edinburgh. Is that correct?
Yes.
Edinburgh, where you live? We had people from Blanco County, which is quite a bit north of us here in Cameron County at the moment, but very much south of where the workshop was going to be. People in Wichita Falls, which is North Texas, wanting to drive several hours over Dallas. And we did, in fact, have people that came as far away as Denton and Dallas that drove us several hours because they knew that one, the Cold War is very much a part of their lives, and two, here was an opportunity, thanks to this private individual, to go into an Atlas F missile silo. So that's what we're always trying to do with those workshops is, what's the location, too?
Yeah.
You need that context. it's great to have a meeting room, and hotels and motels do that just fine. But if you're sitting in the Atlas F missile silo complex in the command and control room, mm-hmm. and the owner of the site saying, on that wall right there is where the young 22 to 28-year-old men, all five of them working in here, would have had control of a weapon capable of such destruction, mm-hmm. it really drew the folks in, and I was happy we were able to have it there.
So that's a good thing, because again, it just shows the possibility of what's going to happen on the next one, just how much, and is it going to be just a one-day thing, or are you going to have to draw it out 2 or 3 days, because just the response is so huge. And Texas, well, you know, 12 sites that you want to go to, or 12 workshops, the state is that big, and yeah, it's going to be huge by the time this is over, and that's pretty good. That's a good deal. So again, so we got to what the project is, how you got involved with it, and where it's going. What do you between now and the time somebody actually attends one of these workshops, what is it they can do here in the state of Texas, obviously, but it's across the board, anybody really anywhere that's listening, what can they do in the meantime?
Well, you may not be able to go to a workshop, but you can certainly visit our website, and I'm sure we can give them the link on your website.
It'll be in the show notes page, definitely.
But they can go to our website. We have a dedicated web page there, Texas in the Cold War, easy to find. And on it, it's going to talk about not only the program, but it's also going to give you links to free how-to manuals. If you're interested in talking to someone, maybe it's your father, maybe it's an aunt who served during the Cold War, maybe it's the neighbor, but somebody that you know that has a Cold War story that you think needs to be preserved, then by all means, seriously consider taking a look at our free brochures, our free handouts on how to, and asking them some questions, seeing if they would be interested in talking. And if they are, then practice a little bit. It's very simple to do oral history. It's not a conversation. It's actually a guided project where you're working with questions, trying to learn more about an event from this person's perspective. Mm-hmm. But if you have the interest, if you have the inclination of doing that, by all means, get out there and talk with folks and try and preserve those stories, because once someone dies, it's as if a library of information is burned down. And you just don't get back that perspective. Mm-hmm. Because you, if you don't mind me using this example, are a veteran of the Cold War. Your experience is going to be totally different than tens of thousands, if not more, individuals during the war. Your experience could be different than those that served with you in your unit in Berlin. Mm-hmm. You're going to come away from things differently. And talking with just one person about a historic event isn't going to truly tell you everything there is to know. But if you want to work to preserve the stories that are closest to you, community, family, etc., by all means, consider doing oral history, because it's something everybody can do, and it's a way everybody can help tell their own story.
Mm-hmm. So there we go. So it's kind of, I hear it when I talk to other veterans. If you've heard the other interviews, I talk to them, and everybody has the same perspective, but from a different angle. You know, we understood why we were in Berlin. We understood why we were there. We understood the Soviets were on the other side. We understood the Warsaw Pact was all around us. But everybody's angle was just a little different. Oh, I loved it. Oh, I, you know, this. Oh, I that. And so, yes, it is. It definitely is something that needs to be captured, needs to be recorded without a doubt. I was fortunate enough many years ago, before my grandfather passed away, he was a World War II veteran, and I did record him. I recorded his story, and I lost the cassettes. But I finally broke down and started emptying out some boxes in the garage, because my wife says we need some room in the garage, and there they were, nice and neatly packed. But that was in the 90s, late 90s. 2013, you know how difficult it is to find a cassette recorder, a cassette player? I found one finally. I found one, a working one, and it was so nice to hear his voice again. It was very nice to hear his voice again. But his story is back, and now we have his story, and that's a good thing. So definitely, folks, the links will be on the webpage to the Historical Commission and Texas in the Cold War website. And anything else that we got on there, we'll definitely put on. And we'll update it as well. Unfortunately, for those of you in Texas, well, fortunately for those of you in Texas, unfortunately for the rest of the world, we'll put the links up to the update page. And if we can, I will put up dates and locations as they're made available. And we'll update that page. And But for anybody else outside of the state of Texas, can they take the same approach? Just visit the website, or is there something they should be doing? Should they be contacting, petitioning somebody?
They can completely feel free and comfortable to visit the website. They can think of it like this: when I'm at workshops, I do all of my oral history training workshops within a military context because that's what I do. I'm a military historian. Plus the grants that we went out and sought to be able to do this, we told our donors we will be doing it for World War II. We will be doing it for Cold War. Mm-hmm. And I tell everybody that comes to these workshops that you may not be completely interested in this history. You may be a Civil War buff. You know, you may be a Vietnam veteran and you're contemplating talking with those that you served with about their experiences, and you think oral history can help you with that. Well, I tell them the training that you get at these workshops can be applied towards any sort of military era. So folks outside the state can think the same thing. Just because this is Texas in the Cold War doesn't mean you can't take the name Texas out and put in your community's name and think of it from the same perspective. Mm-hmm. You're trying to preserve the stories of the individuals that lived through decades of Cold War. And it shaped this nation in many ways that we're still feeling today. Mm-hmm. We're only 22 years away from from the end of this war. But if you look back to when it started, 1946, that means those are the very young soldiers who came in at the end of World War II, or the younger brothers of the World War II generation. Mm-hmm. And the World War II generation's in their late 80s and older. That means the gentlemen and women that fought the Cold War from 46 onward are starting to get quite old. Mm-hmm. They won't be with us forever, and we should work to preserve their stories in one capacity or the other.
Very good. I like that, and that makes a world of sense. It really does. It really does. So again, we'll have all the links and all that information on the website, and everybody, I invite you to try it out. Click on it. Doesn't hurt. It's free. It's from the state of Texas, mind you. Okay, that's what we talk about. And but let's just say they want to push something. Something isn't available in their state. Who should they be talking to? At what level, or to who should they say, "Hey, look, we want to do this kind of project, but on a bigger scale, and we want to do it something like what Texas is doing, but we want to do it for this state."
Mm-hmm. Well, every state is a little bit different in what the name of the agency is. Mm-hmm. That is the, let's say, the primary historical preservation outfit. In Texas, the primary historical preservation outfit is the Texas Historical Commission. But there are so many different groups. From the county to the state level, they're doing great work. But each state has what's called a State Historic Preservation Office, a SHPO, mm-hmm. State Historic Preservation Office. In Texas, it's the Texas Historical Commission. If you're interested in finding out whether or not your state has any sort of official or unofficial oral history project, or want to tell the folks in your state that this is something we should consider, try starting with your SHPO office. Simply use a search engine like Bing or Google, type in the name of your state, type in State Historic Preservation Office or SHPO, and it's going to pop up what it is. Click on it, read into it, find out the contact information, and then find out if they've got a Cold War project or if they would be interested in hearing more from the public. Can't speak for them, mm-hmm. but it doesn't hurt to ask.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Oh, pretty good. So everybody out there, I know some states do, some states don't, and those states that don't, they really want to hear from you. They really should hear from you. And so, without a doubt, get out there and take a look. We're talking with William McWhorter. Did I say that right? Said it right? Okay. And he's with the Texas Historical Commission out of Austin, Texas. And we're here in Brownsville, Texas this afternoon at the Brownsville Heritage Museum.
Historical Association.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Historical Association.
But it is their museum.
It is that the museum is next door. Is that it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's right here. Okay. There we go. And they're kind of set up for a little function that's going on this weekend, the first weekend in November. That's when we're recording this. It's Dia de los Muertos, Festival.
Of the Dead.
Yeah, Day of mm-hmm. the Dead.
Day of the Dead.
Yeah. And so again, it's kind of the after Halloween thing. But it's very neatly done, awesomely done. I'll take a picture and I'll post it up on the website. Any closing comments, remarks, anything I might have missed? I know we talked a little bit briefly before we started recording, but is there anything we forgot or something that popped up while we were talking?
Well, I've always seen two different angles to oral history interviews when people talk to me. they'll come up and say, I know this person. They're an excellent candidate for an interview. We know how to do it. We're going to go do the interview. Or do you know who locally we can talk to? Maybe we can find somebody that knows how to do this. Then you actually talk to that veteran or a home front story. And they'll say, well, I didn't do anything during the war. I didn't do anything special. To the latter, the veteran or the home front story that has someone out there that's interested in talking with them, really consider speaking with them. If you're at that point in your life, everyone has a different experience. Some come back from combat and don't want to talk. Some come back and, you know, we'll talk to anybody that wants to sit down next to them. But if you're on the fence and you're wondering to yourself, well, I don't really think I did anything that is that important or worthy of an interview. If you've got somebody out there, family member, local historical association, even larger, like the Library of Congress's Veteran History Project, and they want to talk with you, seriously consider doing an interview with them if you're at that point in your life, because once you're gone, we can't know what your perspective was, your first person account, your recollections of the Cold War. And without those written down, without those preserved for next generations, you're going to get steadily moved away from December 25th, 1991, the official end date of the Cold War. And you're going to have a lot of folks growing up, not only in the United States, but around the world, that just do not understand what a global changing event it was to live through for so many people from 1946 to 1991.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, my kids are living in a world now that they'll never know what it was like to have the Reds, the communist threat, the bomb, and live with it as a real everyday threat. I mean, it's a good thing, but it's also kind of a bad thing, because they start losing that perspective of what it was really like and how much we've come forward because of what everybody's done, all the commitment, and to preserve it definitely is a must. So I concur, I agree 100%. Everybody, get out there on our website, read it, do your part, go and attend these workshops when they get posted. I know I'm going to be at least one, maybe two, and we'll go from there. But yeah, no, definitely, that's a good thing. And I thank you for taking the time out of your schedule, driving all those hours down here just to meet with me. No, he had a meeting, he had a separate meeting. We just piggybacked off that meeting. But it's still very much appreciated, sir. Thank you very much.
And, well, thank you for your interest. I really appreciate not only what you wanted to know about our project, but also I appreciate your service to our country.
Thank you. And everybody else, too. Well, again, thank you, William. It was great. We'll talk later. We'll definitely be talking. We'll be emailing at least. Now there's a face to the other side of the email, so we'll go from there. Cool. Thank you, sir.
That's what I was
talking about. Very interesting stuff. Very good information. So I hope you take the information that William shared with us and get yourself started. But it also reinforces what I've been saying and what I continue to say and what will just be, I will continue to advocate. Everyone, we're still looking to hear your story. We want to make sure that your time in Berlin is captured and posted for all time for everyone to hear and listen and understand and know. As I've said before, there's a problem, and that is that the history books are quickly marginalizing and minimizing the Cold War to just a few paragraphs, and that is certainly not acceptable. What is acceptable is ensuring that the world never forgets that the Cold War was fought and won by real individuals who experienced firsthand events and deserve to have their time and experiences shared with everyone. So I'm calling on everyone that ever served in Berlin from the end of World War II in 1945 to the day we turn off the lights at McNair and Clay Compound in September of 1994. Everyone, it's real easy. We get you onto the podcast. It's real easy. All you just do is email me, Dave, D-A-V-E, at BerlinBrigade.com, and we'll schedule a date and a time, and the next thing you know, you're on the podcast. Again, you can also give us a call on the hotline at 413-274-4233 or 413-BRIGADE. And you got a couple of minutes there. We've pushed it to about 3 minutes. So if you want to give a brief Cold War story or something you did in Berlin or some memorable event, call 413-274-4233. Tell us your name, your unit, when you were there, and just tell us a little something. And we'll get it on the podcast and we'll lock it down forever. So do that. Please, looking for you. So drop me an email or just call the number. And speaking of calling the number, I want to invite you to call and leave a voice message or an audio comment about the show. Comments, questions, concerns, reunion information, and, of course, podcast ideas at 413-274-4233, or you can email me at dave@berlinbrigade.com. That's D-A-V-E at berlinbrigade.com. If you want to get your message to the right audience, this podcast is the perfect vehicle. The website, also the perfect vehicle to communicate with your audience. So aside from visiting the website, berlinbrigade.com, you can always stay up to date with the latest at berlinbrigade.com by following us on Twitter, www.twitter.com/Berlin Brigade, and Berlin Brigade's all one word. Listen, everyone, I think that's it. That's it for the 53rd episode of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. I want to thank our great interview guest, William McWhorter of the from the Texas Historical Commission, and for spending time talking to us about the Texas in the Cold War project. Thank you, Bill, and I look forward to hearing from you, and I look forward to definitely updating the website with events, the event dates, and how things are going. Listen, everyone, I am your host, David Guerra. Thank you for spending this time with me. I hope you're having a great new year. And until next time, danke, auf Wiedersehen, happy new year, tschüss.
Sergeant Major, dismiss the brigade! The BerlinBrigade.com podcast is a Dave Guerra production. Thank you.